This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Let's turn our attention to the basic Department of Basic Education, which is due to decide on full-time teaching. As you may understand, most of the public schools are on a rotational timetable for a number of grades besides the matriculants who are expected to attend full-time. And indeed, it talks to this issue where we prize grade 12 so much without necessarily thinking through what needs to happen to the other grades. Questions of curriculum coverage, particularly in the formative ages of our children, where you look in terms of the foundation phase, what good does a grade 2 do with 2 days of learning a week? What value do they extract? So the Council of Education Ministers is expected to discuss this matter this week, and we are going to be looking at possible implications of full-time teaching and whether it is the best time for the department to do so. There's much more knowledge we have about the behavior of COVID-19 on children than we did at the beginning of this pandemic. We have seen a number of school children getting infected and affected by the virus, but it seems mortality, hospitalization, and severe disease on children is something that is quite tame. But I am going to be joined on the line by the executive director at NAPTOSA, the National Professional Teachers Organization of South Africa, Basil Manuel, and Professor Lebi Ramrathan will be our guests as well, president of South African Education Research Association, just to take us through and hear what work is being put in place and what is being done to ready the system for this. Because you'll remember, it is still important to ensure that there's adequate PPE for children, for teachers. They sanitize, there's fumigation where cases have been picked up and so on. If you want to be part of that conversation, whether kids should go back full-time to school, the line is 0861-987-000 this morning. Tweet me at @LukonaMnguni, #PowerTalk. Basil Manuel, good morning. Welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you for making...
Good morning to Prof. Lebi as well.
Thank you very much. Professor Lebi Ramrathan, good morning. Welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting us to this crucial conversation that we need to have on a constant basis.
Thank you very much. Basil, let me probably start off with you, because as unions, you've done so much work in the life of this pandemic management in our country, where you've commissioned research, just gauging with school principals whether we are ready for reopening of schools earlier on when we had gone into the hard lockdown, eventually looking at the state of readiness for the start of the 2021 academic year. What work have you done insofar as contending with this proposal for full-time teaching to resume in our schools?
Lukona, thanks for the opportunity. Let me start by saying NAPTOSA certainly welcomes the debate. It's a natural progression of things. Now that we know more about the virus, we know more about the behavior of the virus, and we also know more about the impact of the virus, especially on the junior children, because we are talking about primary schools. We have been part of Education International with our other union partners, and where we've also had research shared with us from countries abroad, from the States, from Europe, in terms of the behavior of the virus amongst children. And as a result, we think that it is not unusual that we should have this discussion.
Yes.
Our concern, however, lies in the context. And the South African context is different. And the virus didn't behave differently here. However, when you look at our school class sizes, they're not even throughout the country. And so that creates disparities, which have been there a long time, but they are enhanced by what is happening with COVID-19. And those concerns will come back to roost with our teachers and their mental health and concern. But we also have to consider, and this is what our call has been, include us so that we can also put on the table our concerns around the third wave that is upon us or about to be upon us. We've got to look at the history of how we've managed PPE and the gaps that are there and remain there. And some of them are erratic. They are attended to, and then we have shortages, etc. And then, of course, we've got to talk about the reality of vaccinations. And are teachers going to be in the front line for this so that we can ensure that we do away with some of those concerns?
Yeah.
So we're happy with the debate, but our concerns need to be addressed as well.
Would you say it's a premature debate, perhaps, given that these ducks you are talking about don't seem to be in row, particularly where vaccination is concerned and our teachers said to be part of phase two, and we haven't even completed phase one of the vaccination process?
No, Lukona, I don't think it's premature, because I don't think the one thing automatically makes for it an exclusion of another.
Yeah.
But I think that certain things must be put into place. For example, when I talk about large class sizes, we know that certain schools have up to 60 children per class. We also know that you can't resolve within a week. But we must have a plan how to address it so that we are not part of the problem of COVID going forward. We are addressing it so that our children are at school full time. We want our children back.
Prof. Ramrathan, we want our children back, and parents are saying we want our children getting quality education. I have been quite concerned when I look at my nephews and nieces going twice to school in grade 3, and I don't feel like they are learning much, and the burden is transferred to the home to make sure that the parents are filling in those gaps of curriculum coverage. From your understanding and your observation, Prof, how dire has been this period of rotation in our schooling, and where do you stand on the debate for full-time teaching and learning?
Well, I would like to, see that full-time learning and teaching, resumes as soon as possible. And I think when I'm saying soon as possible, we have to be paying attention to the protocols, to help us to manage the pandemic. Mm. We can't have inconsistency, in the general public, for example, social distancing and mask wearing and sanitizing, and yet coming to schools where there is no space for social distancing, like Barbara said. Some schools have 80 learners, sorry, 60 learners in a classroom. In fact, my experience with some of my own students, there's about 80, 90 students in a classroom.
Mm.
And it's extremely difficult to create that situation where we try and bring the learners. So although we explored different constellations of bringing learners to schools, we need to think much more deeper. We haven't actually completed a curriculum review of what can we teach in the time of COVID, the time of today, and so forth. And we're taking too long in these kinds of issues. We know the curriculum well. We know what's expected of our learners to progress. And we haven't come to the point where we can decisively say that this is what we should teach in a reduced curriculum, but that is quality and that will be able to enable the learners to progress into higher grades of learning.
I suppose what you are raising, Prof, is that there would also be an issue where assessments become part and parcel to ensure that you have covered the curriculum, but also your assessment is adjusted to the curriculum you have covered, but also to ensure the integrity of the progression process.
Absolutely, and I think we haven't had discussions about what constitutes the competence at grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, grade 11, and so forth. And I think it's now time that we really have to come back to the drawing board and say, what is the purpose of school? What do we want our learners to learn? How can we prepare them for the current situation that they are faced in? And how can we prepare them simultaneously for a world out there that they have to take responsibilities for? We're too long into the kind of same kinds of curriculum with cosmetic changes to it that has been with us for decades.
Now, Prof, the work is one where there is great need for consultation when it comes to this, for parents to have confidence in their children going back that they would not be under threat, because there are also issues where even if the virus behaves somewhat differently in young people, it doesn't stop it from, particularly the older ones, to pass it on and infect elders in their households. Do you think there is enough consultation happening around this conversation?
Well, I'm concerned about consultation because it seems like for me there are certain groupings that are consulted all the time and they're saying the same narrative.
Mm.
So, we really need to, read the way in which we, continue our consultations and conversations with. Because as you mentioned right now, parents are an extremely important component. In one of my earlier interviews, one of the parents basically raised a big issue around, this thing about me being scared of the virus on my child. And yet at the same time, the child needs to continue with learning.
Mm.
And how do we manage those kinds of tensions? So the consultation, I think, really needs to span into real communities and real hospitals.
Absolutely. Are you a parent or a teacher somewhere, an educator, and you are having concerns about the discussions on full-time teaching and learning resuming, or you have some thoughts on how this can be done in a proper way to ensure safety, to ensure integrity of the schooling process? That line is 0861-987-000. Basil, I'm going to come back to you with this question around consultation because it's an important one, so that there isn't split narratives, because I think that's what takes away the confidence in society when the narratives are different from those who are in power versus the unions versus the SGBs and so on. How have you tried to make sure that the platforms for consultation are nurtured but also expanded to include as many people as possible?
Lukona, first of all, from the teacher union perspective, we insist that we must be consulted because, after all said and done, ours is a legal requirement. It's part of the NEPA, which makes consultation with the unions an imperative. But more than that, we've moved away from that narrow framework. And the inclusion of school governing body associations has been done, but we know that those associations don't cover the entire spectrum, and hence a lot of parents still feel left out. And we've got to find a way to bring in more people. We've certainly welcomed and insisted that the private school sector must be part of the consultations, because we don't want this dualistic system where the one group runs off and does its own thing without due consideration of what the rest is doing. Besides, we have one minister. So we haven't always been happy with the consultations. We demand that they happen, but we don't want a report being brought to us. We want to be part of the talks at the ground level so that we can influence the outcomes, not be reported to. And this very often is what happens. And so even ourselves, we have issues with how consultation is done. We can pretend that we're doing a good job at it, and we can actually publish a whole lot of about 100 organizations that are consulted sometimes by the DBE. But that doesn't mean that it was true consultation. It was a report.
Yeah. Please hold the line. I want to take Joe on 0861-987-000. Joe, good morning. Welcome to Power Talk.
Hey, good morning, Lukon, and the guests there in studio or on the line.
Yeah. Morning, Joe.
Yeah, man. You know what? I know we cannot compare our government schools with the private schools, but government schools have been going to schools, and I'm a teacher myself at a private school, observing how the kids interact. There's no difference with when we allow our public school kids to go back to school, So what I'm saying is that they need to go back to school, They cannot wait any longer. I think as long as there are measures put in place for safety, social distancing is always preached, and then they wear their masks, and then they sanitize and all those things, and they fumigate, where when they need to, they have to go back to school. It's doable. And then, like your guest said something like, we now at least understand how this virus works, So we just need to take a chance and get the kids back to school. It's doable. And otherwise, if you drive around the townships and stuff, the kids are running around and playing. There's no social distancing in the townships and stuff. So nothing is happening. They need to go back to school and then deal with it.
Yeah.
As it comes, yes.
Joe in East Rand, thank you very much. I mean, Prof. Ramrathan, this is a significant issue which Basil highlighted. You know, the disparities in our education system have always been known, but COVID-19, as with any other social ills or problems we are dealing with as a country, has just put a significant spotlight. When we talk about public schools, there are those who are actually at the standard of private schools. They've got the spaces, they've got the classroom spaces, they've got teacher assistants that are paid for by SGBs, they are well resourced. But how do we ensure, as we have this debate, which you said is important, we do not leave behind those under-resourced schools without the necessary infrastructure and facilities and personnel to help and ensure that, you know, if there's full-time teaching and learning, there would still be a good social distancing and quality output at the end of the day?
Yeah, we actually have a very good opportunity of addressing all of these things. The fact that we actually identified quintile 1 to 5 schools very clearly indicated that there are vast differences amongst our schools in terms of its facilities, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of its access and so forth. But what we've been doing over the last 20 odd years was to report on what happens there or acknowledge a few things that happened. But we haven't made a concerted effort to say how can we shift a quintile 1 school to a quintile 4 school? How can we shift a quintile 2 school to a quintile 5 school and so forth? Because we're not doing that. And if we begin to be serious about changing the infrastructure of education within our country, we really have to work substantially in improving the quality of the infrastructure of our schoolings to make it better resources. Because if you have a good teaching and learning environment, you'll be able to get good teaching and learning outcomes. Prof, and that has been, as we showed in a lot of literature.
Prof, you are raising something that's interesting and fascinating to me. I was interacting with some people at the Department of Education in KZN, and the state-of-the-art school had been built somewhere in northern KwaZulu-Natal. I hope the name will come back to me at some point. And because it's in a rural area, it was classified as a quintile 1. Perhaps is there something wrong with our criteria to classify schools? Because I imagine what you are saying is that as a marker of success, there should be a concerted effort to graduate schools. But it seems as if a part of the criteria is just arbitrarily geographic.
Yeah, I mean, there are criteria to rank the schools in terms of quintile rankings, but those criteria needs to be revised on a continual basis. What seems to happen is that there's over a decade before the criteria is even looked at. And also, if you look at migration of learners across schools, you know, while a school might be quintile at 5, and you get a whole lot of learners coming from, you know, very poor backgrounds and so forth, but yet we use criteria that don't resonate with who's attending a school, what infrastructure is available at the school, and how teaching and learning happens. So our criteria for quintiling schools need to improve. But more substantially, I think we really need to do something about getting rid of quintile 1, 2, and 3 schools.
Yeah. Basil, I mean, talking about these disparities, we do know that as unions, you lost a number of members, particularly in the second wave of COVID-19. Has there been a speedy process to fill in a vacant post that, you know, have been created by virtue of educators losing their lives to COVID-19-related complications, or is the process to replace going at a slow pace?
It has been very tardy, if I'm being generous.
Yeah.
In fact, it's been ridiculous because the very department has also abused the fact that 50% of the learners are there at a time to sort of suggest that the urgency to replace the teachers hasn't been there or isn't there. And that is completely incorrect, simply because the reality is that they are specialists. And if a specialist is one part on particularly the secondary school, you can't have somebody else fill in. The quality of the learning and teaching is not going to be the same. Similarly, if it is one of your grade 1 or grade 2 or grade 3 teachers that are really specialist in their own right in terms of reading and writing and introduction into school work.
They are the foundation of the entire system, in fact.
Absolutely. And that is where our biggest gaps are lying at the moment. And if you don't replace with the right people, you are then perpetuating a problem. And you remember the whole controversy around 24,000 teachers short, and then it was said, no, actually, it's posts that hadn't been filled after we were given the assurance that these posts would be filled. But by the end of last term, there were still vacancies that hadn't been filled. Mm. Vacancies created because of attrition, deaths, resignations, etc. And this is shameful. And, of course, KZN, since you mentioned them, just published last week a letter to say that it is redeploying a number of people who were in surplus in other schools. Now, we know that that is the normal labor process, but this can't happen 3 months into a year.
Yeah.
When you knew in September of the year before that these people were going to be surplus for next year.
In fact, Basil, some developments in the Eastern Cape seems at least two districts I'm familiar with, Lusikisiki and Libode, the rationalization of schools process is happening. I've been getting some complaints from educators saying, well, as grade 8 and 9 are being shifted to the high schools from the primary schools, some teachers don't shift with them, such as technology teachers, for example, and the high schools don't have the capacity for that. And this is all a bit disturbing for the learners, because so much is happening in this period. They too are anxious about their own futures. What are some of the things that you are doing as intervention to bring these problems to those who are in authority, particularly where the rationalization of schools is continuing and still visiting certain problems?
Insofar as the Eastern Cape in particular is concerned, because that is where the greatest rationalization of schools is taking place. Remember, they've had a system where they had junior primary schools, yep, intermediate schools, and then, of course, senior primary, and some of them were combined. So there's a whole lot of different models running there. We had agreed that in time we need to get the system straightened out. However, when COVID struck, we then met with the late Mr. Khojana, who was the DG at the time, the SG at the time. And we thought we had struck an agreement that said we need to put certain things on hold. It is not the ideal time now to be rationalizing schools, to be disrupting schools, and, of course, forgetting that the geography is such that You can't say to a teacher, you need to transfer to the neighboring school. The neighboring school could be 40 kilometers away,
yeah,
and you haven't considered that. And these are the problems that we are facing in the Eastern Cape. Our people there have been very hard at work, particularly in Lusikisiki and Labode, as you say, but even greater than that. But these are issues that, unfortunately, with the tragic passing on of one person, the other people now are picking up on the paperwork, but not on some of the decisions that have been taken subsequent to that. And we are blindly rushing into something that we believe is not a priority at the time when COVID seems to be having a resurgence again.
Prof. Ramrathan, I have a tweet here from a concerned parent who says, look on, as much as I want my kid to go to school full time, having an asthmatic child, for me, timing is crucial. I worry with the readiness of the educators. My kids don't even go to malls because I have no control how they will behave or other kids around. I mean, Prof, we've seen this in higher education. I'm very familiar where the teacher has become, or the lecturer has become, a lot of things, a psychologist, a career guide, and all these other services that would be ordinarily available to children, but now the expectation is on the teacher. How do we ensure that we provide cushioning and support for our teachers as we have this full-time return for teaching and learning conversation?
Yeah, these are extraordinary times that requires extraordinary measures. And I think we have to realize that, you know, with the current organization of schools and the current teaching, staff and responsibilities, that will not prevail in a crisis condition. And I think the sooner we actually realize that we need to look at ways in which we need to support learners, both in terms of teaching and learning, but also in terms of the mental health as well as the medical health. And therefore, the schools as organizations need to be equipped with those kinds of support services. You don't have to have them in every school, but you at least have them in a cluster of schools where learners, parents, and teachers could have access to additional supports. I mean, we're consistently putting econometric discourses on organizational issues that is of a social nature and educational nature. And those two discourses don't work hand in hand.
Prof. Ramnathan and Basil Manuel, that's all we have time for this morning. But thank you so much for making the time for us here on Power Talk.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, Professor Lebi Ramrathan, there, President with South African Education Research Association, and Basil Manuel with NAPTOSA, the Executive Director there. Thank you so much, people of power.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.